Welcome to the Aesthetic Doctor Podcast. We don't shy away and keep secrets here. We empower you with education, telling you the truth about all things aesthetic medicine, while encouraging you to be the best version of yourself. It's time to look great and feel good doing it. This is your host, mom, speaker, and board-certified physician, Dr. Judith Forger.
Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 61 of the Aesthetic Doctor Podcast. Today's special guest is Dr. Virginia Giugliano, and we are going to talk about menopause and hormone replacement myths busted. Dr. Giugliano, who I'm going to call Dr. Virginia from now on because it's just easier, and that's what she goes by on Instagram, is a board-certified OB-GYN who completed her OB-GYN residency at Albany Medical Center Hospital in 1995. She has been practicing hormone replacement ever since then, so that is over 20 years, closer to 30 years. She is passionate about assisting women with hormonal issues throughout their lifetime, with a particular focus on menopause. She also has expertise with aesthetics and sexual health. She currently maintains practices in Albany and New York City, where she treats women with hormonal issues, sexual concerns, and aesthetics. One disclaimer is that this podcast and all information in this podcast is for informational purposes only, unless Dr. Virginia or myself are your actual treating physicians. So please join me in welcoming Dr. Virginia G to the Aesthetic Podcast. Hello, Dr. Virginia. Wow, Virginia. Woman to woman, physician to physician, I'm so excited that we're sort of talking about menopause and hormones, because I think you and I are both sort of bridging probably the edge of menopause where I'm still going into it. I assume you're either in it or past it. And I think a lot of our listeners kind of are either looking at it, going through it, or have already gone through it.
Exactly. And as you're going through your own personal journey, it definitely helps you understand it better and make you more relatable to your patients. So I am on the other end. I'm all the way through. I've walked over that bridge. It's kind of a crickety bridge. It's kind of not a straight line. But I've had some interesting symptoms, and now I can say that I feel like I'm in a much better place, and I am doing what I preach. I am on bioidentical hormones, and it's definitely working for me.
Well, awesome. Let's kind of back up a little bit. What are some of the major changes that kind of happen during menopause? Really, seeing that this is for a lay audience, and I want to make sure that we all kind of understand what's actually happening with our bodies.
Sure. Well, I think any time in a woman's life when she starts seeing a change in her menstrual pattern, that is suggestive of some type of hormonal issue, some type of hormonal imbalance. And so it can happen to women as early as even their 20s, unfortunately, but really in any decade of life when they start seeing change in their menstrual pattern and other symptoms. The classic symptoms, I think many people understand to be hot flashes and night sweats, which will wake you up where you're in a complete sweat, have to kick off all the blankets, and then in the next minute you're freezing, so you put them back on, only to wake up and repeat that same cycle several times overnight. It can really affect your sleep. And so people have issues with being tired all day long, fatigue, and then even independent of the sleep issues, there's the effect that it has on the brain. So suddenly women are feeling like they just can't concentrate and multitask and do anything that requires a little bit more brain power than simple tasks. And that can be very frustrating for a woman who's an established either a career woman or even a mom who's juggling multiple kids and their schedules and their activities, to suddenly not be able to have that brain power. So it's those symptoms, and there's lists of so many others. Some of the symptoms you wouldn't think are related to menopause, like joint issues, aches and pains. And we've seen women have more frequent injuries when they're exercising, but they haven't gone up on their weights and they haven't changed their exercise pattern. So all of a sudden, what is this? Or their digestion is changing. Suddenly they have bloating and difficulty digesting the same foods that they've always eaten, or they have reflux. Essentially, there are estrogen and progesterone receptors in just about every organ system in the body. And so when those hormones are out of balance or are produced in very low levels, it's going to create symptoms that are very noticeable.
So the two other ones that I thought of that I hear a lot of women complain is really also irritability and just feeling sort of angry at their kids, their work, their spouses, and not feeling like themselves. And then, of course, changes in their sexual desire, as well as maybe even discomfort with intimacy or some vaginal dryness.
Absolutely. Yes, I didn't want to go on and list 80 of them. I want to give you a chance to also come up with what you're familiar with and maybe what you've experienced too. But certainly sexual health is a big concern in all women. And once a woman starts experiencing vaginal dryness, painful intercourse, and urinary incontinence, that can definitely affect your sex life. And not to mention your sex drive itself is usually affected with the decrease in hormone production. And mood issues are found to be much more common in women at midlife. And we do feel that it has a significant relation to the change in hormones produced at midlife. So one of the things that I get frustrated over when I see a woman who suddenly is feeling tearful out of the blue, or having depressive symptoms or symptoms of overwhelm, she'll go to her primary care doctor or her gynecologist, and they'll offer to put her on an anti-anxiety medication, a medication for sleep, and a medication for depression, where I feel like we could describe that as the Band-Aid approach. So let's give you a Band-Aid to treat this symptom, rather than investigate a little further and understand that the root cause of these symptoms are most likely related to your menopausal transition.
Yeah, and you shared earlier with me that there's really like this little bit, and I don't know whether to call it gaslighting or not, whether it's really an intentional, we don't feel like you're yet in menopause because maybe you're only in your early 40s, or you're even in your 30s or whatever, because you're still having periods. But you earlier mentioned that you had sort of some own personal experience of having some symptoms and really feeling like the traditional medical community or the physicians you've reached out for, that they weren't really able to address them. Would you mind just sharing your story about that?
Absolutely. So it's interesting, because even in the world of gynecologists, I think there are few gynecologists who really enjoy and specialize in treating menopausal women. So for the other OBGYNs who perhaps are more interested in obstetrics or other areas of OBGYN, they don't want to take the time that it takes to truly listen to what has changed. And it doesn't matter, again, if you're an educated professional woman or you're a stay-at-home mom or anything in between, you know when something is different with your body. You know when something is off. And when you go to your doctor, the expectation that you have and that you should receive is, number one, to be validated that you do, in fact, have something going on. And it's not just you making up symptoms in your head, or that you're looking for attention or secondary gain, that something's truly going on. And please take the time to take it seriously, to understand it's affecting the quality of life. And together, can we figure out what's going to be the best solution for this? So I was still not fully menopausal, and there's somewhat of an unwritten rule in OBGYN that a woman has to be fully menopausal, meaning a full year without a menstrual period before they can start estrogen. And this is not based on any good science, and that is not something that should be a limitation. If a woman is having symptoms of low estrogen or fluctuating estrogen, and those would be hot flashes, irritability, sleep deprivation, vaginal dryness, then you certainly can start an estrogen patch or estrogen vaginal cream in a lower dose, perhaps, than you would in somebody who's fully menopausal, but you don't try and treat them with something else or tell them that their symptoms can't be that bad because they're not fully menopausal, and tell them they have to wait until after they're fully menopausal. So that may have been my experience.
I'm sorry to hear that. So you kind of touched on some of the hormones briefly. Again, you and I are medical professionals, but I really, again, want to make sure it's accessible for all of our listeners. And we know that estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone are kind of some of our main hormones that govern our reproduction, that govern our sexual health. Can you just quickly tell our listeners, what do the levels of all three of those hormones do during menopause? That means when somebody's going perimenopausal or fully menopausal, which one of them go down? Do any of them go up, or do they all go down, or one more than the other?
That's a great question. And I want to start by saying that I think the general public believes that testosterone is a male hormone and not a female hormone. And I want to say that testosterone is very important in both men and women. That yes, men make more testosterone than women do, but women have significant symptoms of low testosterone if that is what they're experiencing. And it should not be ignored. And unfortunately, we don't have an FDA-approved testosterone medication yet for women in this country, which is kind of crazy, but we've got some advocacy going on in Washington, so hopefully we'll see that in the near future. So the hormone that decreases first is progesterone, and we see that happening as early as the mid-30s, and the symptoms that can cause is a change in the menstrual cycle. Oftentimes when women see their periods are coming closer together, meaning normal than their 20, shorter than their 28 to 30 day cycle. So maybe it's 24 or 25 days, and it's a gradual type of thing. Also, their sleep may be affected and their mood may be affected. And so relative to their estrogen levels, they have less progesterone. So the symptoms related to higher estrogen levels are going to be more apparent to them. So they may have more breast tenderness, again, moodiness, irritability, those types of symptoms. And that's pretty typical. Also, PMS is something that we see worsening in the 30s and the 40s. Then as you get closer to the menopausal transition, that's when you see the changes in the estrogen production. And it's not like you have a steady decline in estrogen on a day-to-day ongoing basis, because the ovaries produce the estrogen and they are trying so hard to continually do their job of producing an egg every month. So there will be some months where it'll be really, really efficient and you'll have a nice moderate to high level of estrogen. And then the next month, it'll be like, ooh, there's almost nothing there. So not only is it a change in the estrogen level where overall it's going down, but there's greater fluctuations, and the fluctuations can wreak havoc on your mood, your temperature, the hot flashes, and so many things, because you just, it's kind of like puberty, but in reverse. Some days you're feeling very, very good. And other days, boy, the hormones are raging and you just don't know what to expect. So that's what happens with estrogen. And then with testosterone, there is a gradual decline in testosterone over time. That's more typical. And so in relation to each other, you'll see that if one's going down and the other one's fluctuating and the other one's going down a little more gradually, the relation to each other is changing over time. So much of that interaction can cause variation in symptoms as well.
Well, thank you so much for that. That was super helpful. So before we get into BHRT, can you just define what it is for us?
Sure. So the term bioidentical hormones is not technically a medical term that is recognized by Western medicine. And I think that it came about from the functional medicine doctors when they were trying to distinguish themselves from the synthetic hormones that were traditionally available and prescribed by Western doctors. So specifically, I'm referring to the conjugated equine estrogen. So in other words, there was a company that developed an conjugated estrogen, which is a group of estrogens derived from the urine of pregnant horses. And that was actually the number one prescribed estrogen for women in menopause in the 80s and 90s up until the WHI study. And likewise, the progesterone is such a large and difficult molecule to absorb that we didn't have an oral form of natural progesterone that was available until the late 90s. And so prior to that, we had only synthetic progestins, which are similar in structure and have similar effects, but in some cases they have some side effects that are unwanted side effects. And they're stronger in some respects than natural progesterone. So if you were a woman in the 80s or the 90s, you would have been treated with, and can I say the brand name?
Yeah, absolutely. That's the 80s or the 90s.
Okay. So back then it was Premarin and Provera, or the combination of the two was Prempro. So it was an oral estrogen derived from pregnant horse's urine and a synthetic progestin. And so what the functional medicine doctors were looking for was, well, why don't we treat women with the exact same form of estrogen and progesterone that they already make in their bodies? So the functional medicine doctors would use estradiol. There's three estrogens that exist in a woman's body: estrone, estradiol, and estriol. And so the main one that is functioning during your fertile years is estradiol. And so the functional medicine doctors would use estradiol in a form of a compounded cream that you could apply topically or vaginally. And as far as the progesterone goes, before oral micronized progesterone was available, functional medicine doctors would compound it in a cream. So you could put the estradiol and the progesterone together in one cream and use that topically on the skin or vaginally. And then as far as testosterone goes, we again don't have an FDA approved testosterone for women as of yet. So the options are to either use what is FDA approved for men in a much smaller dose, or compound the testosterone in a topical cream or a vaginal cream.
So basically it's called bioidentical because it is really very similar to what your body makes, or the same thing as you actually find.
Right. It's the same chemical structure. So I like to describe, like, why is that important? Why is it important to treat somebody with a bioidentical hormone that is the same chemical structure? Well, because when the hormone is traveling in your body and reaches the end organ, say it's going to your brain, well, it's going to go into your brain cells and be recognized as estradiol. So the receptors, the receiving end, will recognize it and they'll come together very nicely and do the effect just like the same result is, yes, a puzzle piece. So imagine if you have your receptor is sitting there waiting for estradiol, and you have something that isn't exactly the same as estradiol. So it's going to come in and it might fit partially, but not completely. So that means that it may have some of the same effects, which we're hoping are good effects, but it may also have some side effects that are unexpected or undesirable. And that's definitely what we saw with the synthetic progestin versus micronized oral progesterone, the natural progesterone that our body makes. There's some different side effects that became very, very significant.
Okay. Well, that is actually really important to know, because I think even I did not really know why and how that came to be. So thank you. So if somebody comes to you and let's say they're having these symptoms, maybe they're in their late 40s, what is the process like? Do you test their hormones? Like, I would love to know what like the average or the process in your office is like.
Sure. That's a great question. So first of all, we take an extensive medical history. We want to know, first of all the symptoms that she's experiencing that's different from what she had when she felt well, and then look at all of her medical conditions and any medications and supplements that she's taking currently. Because sometimes some of the symptoms are related to another condition or even to as a side effect to another medication. So you want to not just make an assumption that everything is menopause, but do a very good, thorough evaluation. So then I ask if contraception is an issue. If the woman has not had her tubes tied and she has a male partner who has not had a vasectomy, are they looking to have children or are they looking to avoid having children? Because contraception is something that obviously would be indicated. And we don't want to treat somebody with, say, testosterone at a higher dose if they're going to get pregnant or they could possibly get pregnant. We want to have the pregnancy issue be part of the equation. So yes, doing hormonal evaluation is indicated because there are other hormonal issues that can mimic menopausal symptoms also. Very commonly, women have thyroid issues. So underactive thyroid can make a woman feel sluggish, tired, depressed. An overactive thyroid can make a woman feel anxious and have sleep difficulties, and they can have temperature irregularity where they're sweating all the time. So you definitely have to rule out thyroid disease. Additionally, if women are very, very stressed and have been stressed for a long time or have gone through many illnesses, their cortisol may be off. So the adrenal glands produce cortisol, and that's what regulates our sleep and wake cycles and what regulates really the rate of all of our bodily functions. So we want to make sure their cortisol is being produced in the normal way throughout the day. So that we can oftentimes figure out just based on symptoms and their medical history. So sometimes we'll do just a morning cortisol, but cortisol is something that changes throughout the day. And if you really suspect an adrenal issue, then you have to check their cortisol 4 times a day, actually.
You decide that they're actually a great candidate for hormone replacement. I assume this happens like after you get the labs and at a follow-up visit. Then what hormones do you most commonly replace, and what are the ways that you do it? Do you do injections? Do you do creams? Do you do suppositories or vaginal creams? Do you do pellets? Like, what do you do in your practice?
Okay, great question. So hormones can be replaced orally, with patches, with transdermal creams, vaginally, and with pellets. And a pellet is a very, very small, almost like the size of a grain of rice, compressed hormone that slowly is released. So we insert that just below the skin, usually in the area of the hip, and you can have pellet insertion done about every 3 to 4 months, depending on dosage and symptoms. So I like to incorporate the understanding of the risk factors for certain types of ways in which you can administer the medication. So specifically what I'm referring to is oral estrogens. What we learned from the WHI study in the early 2000s is that oral estrogen, because it's absorbed in the gut and goes to the liver first, does increase clotting risks for women. So especially we found in smokers or women over the age of 60 that there was a higher risk for strokes and cardiac events related to blood clotting. So I almost never prescribe an oral estrogen. So when I'm looking to prescribe estradiol, what's nice is there are bioidentical forms of hormones that are covered by insurance. So the estradiol patch is generic. It comes in several different dosage forms. So as long as somebody doesn't have an issue with reaction to the glue on the patch, then I think it's a great way to treat with estradiol without having the increased risk of stroke that you would if it was an oral estrogen. So many of my patients are on transdermal estradiol patch. The downside with the patch is sometimes one dose is a little too high and the next lowest dose is a little too low. So that's where the benefit of the compounded cream comes in. Now, typically compounded creams are only partially covered or maybe not covered at all by insurance, but a compounded cream, you can customize the dose and you can use the cream once daily or twice daily. So there's a little more involved with the cream on the patient end compared to the patch with it, which they would change twice a week. With the cream, they have to use it every day, but it does allow for micro changes in dosing. For the progesterone, I really like the oral micronized progesterone. It is now generic, so pretty much any insurance covers it. And the reason I like it is because when you take it at bedtime, it helps with sleep. And so many of our menopausal and perimenopausal women are having sleep issues. So you have to take it at bedtime, not during the day, and best to take on an empty stomach, because if you take it with food, the absorption gets enhanced and you might get dizzy or woozy feeling. So if a woman doesn't have issues with sleep, or say she feels like it's too sedating for her to take orally, then you can use the compounded cream. And again, I mentioned earlier that you can compound the estradiol and the progesterone together. So it's one medication that you can use either transdermally on the skin or vaginally. For testosterone, there is no oral testosterone that I would use for women. And I would caution men from using oral testosterone as well. There is a testosterone gel that's available and FDA approved for men. So we just change the dose for women to be appropriate for women's dosing. Or we can compound it. And again, we could put it all together with our progesterone and our estrogen and have it transdermal or transvaginal. And we could also do a pellet. All three of these hormones are available in pellet form as well. So I don't like to start with pellets because many times, especially if women are going through their transition, their dose is going to change. So I like to get them to the point where they are stable on a dose for a longer period of time. And then if for convenience purposes, they want to switch to pellets and then they're only dosed every 3 months, that's great. That's a great way to do it.
Awesome. I love that. Now, it sounds really, really involved. And like you said, a lot of physicians maybe that have only traditional training might not have all of the training. So how does, let's say somebody's listening and saying, wow, I would really love to be evaluated for my hormones. How does somebody find a competent doctor? Because I think there's a lot of horror stories out there too about improperly trained doctors that use a computer program by some company to do, or mid-levels or practitioners to get a pellet formulation and blindly insert that pellet. And then women have all these side effects because suddenly they're growing beards and feeling worse than before. So how does somebody find a properly trained practitioner?
That's a great question. So where do you find a qualified menopause practitioner? So the North American Menopause Society, which is now called the Menopause Society, educates physicians, nurse practitioners, and physician assistants, and they have a certification program. So they maintain a list of providers who've gone through their certification program, and you can search via your geographic area to find a NAMS or Menopause Society certified provider. So that's the short answer, is go to themenopausesociety.org.
All right. So the short answer is to go to menopause.org or the NAMS. You yourself have a practice. How would people find you, and which states do you treat patients in?
I currently am in New York State only, and my website is amazinglyageless.com, and that would be the best way to reach me is through my website or via my Instagram, which is Dr. spelled out, Dr. Virginia G, via Instagram, or also Amazingly Ageless on Facebook.
I love it. Now, I want to, seeing that we're kind of talking a little about myth, and I think you've already busted a lot of myths, like about the testosterone, I guess a couple questions, and one of them you already answered about insurance coverage. So I think it sounds like insurance coverage might be variable, that certain things are covered, certain things are not covered. Is that pretty much kind of true?
That is true. So I personally don't accept insurance. However, I can provide basically an invoice that has the diagnosis codes on it. So people who have a flexible healthcare spending plan can then submit that, and they may get full or partial reimbursement. And I think, sadly, this is a driving force for many people. They're limited by insurance coverage, and they'll only go to a provider that is covered by their insurance. And the reason why, I do want to address really briefly why it seems crazy that there's OBGYNs and medical doctors, family practice doctors out there who haven't been trained in menopause. And the reason is because of the WHI study that was thought to be a really great study, and it was ended early in 2002 because the study design was flawed. And what we found is that there were older women being placed on oral estrogen and oral estrogen and synthetic progestin who had some significant untoward effects. And so because of that, and they were synthetic hormones, women were stopped from their hormones abruptly. And a whole generation of medical providers were taught that all hormones were bad. So they essentially threw the baby out with the bathwater. They never studied transdermal estrogen in this study. They did not study natural progesterone, bioidentical progesterone in the study. And so to this day, I speak with doctors who have trained since then who will tell me, but estrogens and hormones cause cancer, and that is not the case. So until we have more and more providers who are going through training that is offered by the Menopause Society, unfortunately, it's an uphill battle that we're facing.
Yeah, thank you for explaining that. That was actually my next question. Do okay. hormones cause breast cancer?
So what was found in the WHI study, it's interesting because bad news always makes the press, but good news doesn't necessarily make the front page. So for the women who are on estrogen only in the WHI study, they actually had a decreased incidence of breast cancer, and it was significant. But that's not what was blaring on the headlines. What made the headlines was that the women on the estrogen with synthetic progestin had an increased risk for breast cancer. And so that was one of the safety markers that said, oh, we've got to stop the study. And that is the reason why to this day, lay people, as well as many in the medical community, believe that hormones cause breast cancer. Not all hormones do. Estrogen alone offers a protective effect for breast cancer, and natural progesterone also decreases your risk for breast cancer.
Well, thank you for qualifying that. Is there anything about hormones, menopause? I mean, I know there's so much, but is there anything, given our conversation and the fact that we sort of have the lay public listening, that you would want to share with our audience?
In general, I think that every woman deserves the conversation, and the conversation should be about her personal risks and benefits for using hormones. And I don't think we addressed that not only is it quality of life, like being able to sleep through the night and not have the hot flashes and all of that, but there's many, many studies that show that the appropriate hormone therapy actually can extend your life and decrease the incidence of chronic illnesses. For example, diabetes, osteoporosis, heart disease, dementia. I mean, we're all going to die of something at some point in time, but wouldn't you want to live the last third or the last half of your life enjoying the most vibrant and exciting life that you can, instead of being somebody on multiple medications with multiple chronic diseases and just kind of waiting for the end?
Well, that sounds terrible. No, for sure. And I think that's a really big overall conversation too, because I have my whole thought, again, like women's health and women's quality of life. I think there's still sort of a gender disparity as to the amount of funding and attention and all of the things, right? And how women and aging are seen in our society. But I think there's us as a generation, right? It's like we are, I think, kind of reclaiming that too, because we're not our mothers when they're in their 50s or 60s. We're like, wait, we are young, we're vibrant, we want to be healthy, we want to enjoy sexual health, we want to enjoy relationships, we want to enjoy, you know, joy. And like, no, this is not okay that, like, again, like you said, it's like, well, menopause, you're done. Let's like shove you into the grandma closet. Like, I think it's amazing that we're sort of reclaiming that.
Yes, it is. And it's a big movement. And I see it happening at multiple different levels. We've had some of the leaders in the field who've been advocating in Washington for more research dollars to go into women's health, specifically mature women's health. And something as simple as vaginal estrogen given to every woman over the age of 60, because every woman's gone through menopause by that point in time. So think about your grandmother who is getting a urinary tract infection. And then what happens? She gets confused. She might get septic. She might fall down and break a hip. And that might be the last thing she does. We can save lives by using a simple, generic, inexpensive vaginal estrogen. And just that would save so much money in healthcare dollars and so much angst over illness that is preventable.
Yeah, I love that. Well, we could talk forever, but
yes,
I just thank you for being on there. I love this conversation, and I'm sure all of our listeners did too. Again, all of Dr. Virginia's links are in our show notes. Amazingly Ageless is her website, as well as her Facebook. And, you know, again, she looks amazingly ageless. And so I'm going to ask you a question that I ask all of my aesthetic providers. So number one, what is your favorite treatment to receive? And what is your favorite treatment to perform?
Oh, wow. It's really hard to limit it to one. But I will tell you that the number one thing that every person who wants to retain their youthful skin should do is wear SPF every single day, rain or shine, winter or summer. But as far as procedures go, I really like the combination of Morpheus radio frequency microneedling and Sculptra. So the radio frequency stimulates your body to heal itself, regenerate more collagen, and the Sculptra is injected and it helps you also to stimulate collagen. So those that combination is my favorite treatment, both to receive and to perform.
Well, I love it. And thank you so much. As a little aside for our listeners, Dr. Virginia and I have known each other for a very, very long time. We actually trained together like eons and eons and eons ago. And then when we both set up businesses, kind of, again, a long time ago, really helped each other out. And it's like, lovely to see her soar. She's director of training and has established lots of, you know, has established the hormone program for Dr. Lana. She has her own hormone replacement practice. I mean, it's just amazing to see all of the things that you've done and all of your own glow and happiness. So again, thank you for coming on. And it was just such a pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me. It was my pleasure as well.
Hello, listeners. Before we go, I would like to add a correction. I mistakenly called Dr. Virginia the director of training for Lana. She informed me that she's only one of the trainers. So that was my mistake. I apologize. And then I also want to add that not only does Dr. Virginia has her own practice at amazinglyageless.com, she also sees patients for hormone replacement and menopause related symptoms at LC Medical right in downtown New York City. All right, well, we will see you next week. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Aesthetic Doctor Podcast with Dr. Judith Borger. We'd love to connect with you outside of the show. Follow Dr. Borger on Instagram at Dr. Borger and find more online and ways to work with Dr. Borger at www.theaestheticdoctor.com. Until next time, be well.